You're now listening to The Brian Callen Show, considered the hottest podcast in the universe by Martians. Now get ready for the heat. Here's Brian Callen.
What's up, everybody? Brian Callen Show here. You're on The Brian Callen Show, and this is Brian Callen, and I'm on The Brian Callen Show. And guess who else is joining me? My buddy, Mike Casantini, who makes all this possible. He's my producer, and produces the podcast, and he's going to help me produce my 1 hour, and he's doing all that stuff. Mike.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me on the show.
Okay, you're terrible. You are terrible on the radio.
I
Holy
do.
Holy shit, are you bad on a mic? Just relax.
Made this show happen.
There's no life in your
voice. How
does it
feel? How does it feel to actually live vicariously through me?
Hey, wait a minute, dude.
Whoa.
This is ridiculous. This is not the way I wanted to go. I thought, you know, Mike had the idea that we recap the year, and we've had some great podcasts, man.
Yes, we have.
Michael Fattorossi, who's a lawyer for the porn industry and married to a porn star, and his point of view on sort of the Constitution and how porn should be.
Episode 11.
Legal. Yep. Then there was my father, who's at 72 years old, continues to grow. He's taking math and Italian right now. But, you know, he's a guy who worked for the government at a high level and then worked at as a CEO in the banking industry. And he's got a very strong point of view on why things happened the way they did in 2007. And he's very articulate about what to warn us against, which is really big money in politics and the way government is structured, and it's structured to take our liberties away from us. It's not a new concept, but I think the way he articulates it is great, which kind of brings me to, you know, I'm kind of stuck between, you know, I do this comedic podcast called The 10-Minute Podcast, and we were named by iTunes as the top three best comedies of 2012 comedic podcasts. But my podcast, I think I could stand to use a little more comedy. I'm going to try to do that. I did that with Kevin Hart.
Funny episode. Real good episode.
And we've done some of that. I think that at the same time, maybe it's because I'm getting older, but I happen to believe that we're faced with some real challenges. I want to showcase some of the leaders in thought in various subjects that can not only provoke thought, but also enlighten my listeners to what the real problems are. The problem with growing, being young and looking at the world is that it becomes very overwhelming. You know, something's wrong, but you don't know where it is. You don't really know how to get to the root of the problem. That's a very important thing to get to. You've got to, it's kind of like being in a relationship where you guys always yell at each other and you can't figure out what the fuck, how it happens, why it always spirals out of control. You go see a professional and he can tell you sometimes, or sometimes he can't. But that's kind of a huge part of life, is figuring out, getting to the root of the problem. It's learning where to place your energy. Usually most of us are spending a great deal of energy on things that don't really matter or are not actually part of the solution, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm thinking about this terrible tragedy in Connecticut, you know? And enough has been said about it, but I always, you know, it's interesting. You've got two camps. One camp that says it's not guns, and another camp that says it is guns, and another camp that says it's a public health issue. And then the issue becomes, well, once we've established what the problem is, which nobody agrees on,
right?
Now what do you do about it? You know, my personal opinion is it's a multi-pronged approach. Let's figure out what makes sense. There's got to be a conversation about it.
There was this attitude change after my mom's generation that was, let's give what we didn't have to our kids. Let's make sure they have a life that we didn't have.
It's always been human.
And I think it might be human, but at the end of the day, I just don't think that, if you go back to my mom's parents, who I think raised children right, they were no nonsense. You couldn't get away with anything. There was a slight bit of internal fear that kept you moving.
The only thing about that is that I actually think every generation has said that. I actually think that the funny thing about history is that we all have this notion that we're living in a unique time. In some ways, we're living in a unique time in the sense that, you know, there's new technology available to us and more information can be seen more quickly. But the age-old problems of being a human being certainly still exist, and I think they're as relevant today as they were 5,000 years ago. That's kind of always the way, you know, as we get older, we say, well, you know, this is what's wrong with kids today. You know, that becomes very, that's a good sure sign of realizing you're getting older. You know, I'm 45, but I you know, you will admit that I look 25. I have very tight fitting skin.
I have
a beautiful body. I move like a jungle cat. You will admit that.
Nope.
You'll admit that now on the air, or I'll flip out.
Oh my God.
And I'll smack that stupid red mustache off
your
face.
Oh my gosh. He just threatened me.
Yeah.
On tape.
Yeah. He threatened you on tape.
Yeah.
And listen to how my voice doesn't change at all.
Oh.
It just stays real even, yeah, real even.
Real creepy. No, I mean, you've actually, that's the one thing I like about your podcast, is you've actually touched on a variety of different social issues, a variety of different thought patterns, from comedians to authors to people who have been in the military to people who work in industries that are preferred and somewhat taboo. You've had an array of different individuals, and I think that it's been a pleasure over this, you know, last year to sit and listen to where the discussion goes, and because you know, I think the response that we're seeing from those who have been listening to the podcast is a high level of intrigue. They're very interested in what you have to say, what you're thinking about, and who you bring on the show, and what their thoughts are. And you know, I would like to see a little bit more comedy, personally.
Yeah, maybe I'm going to start. Maybe we'll open it with me riffing on subject matter, you know, and then we'll go, and then we'll go into the interview.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
End with something else, you know. Right. I can do that separately. You know what I mean?
What would be, if you were to classify your three favorite interviews out of the 26 episodes that we were able to put down this year, what would be?
I don't know.
Three?
They're all so different, man. I just don't know. I mean, anytime I'm learning something, I love it. You know, I loved the one with Kevin Hart because I wasn't sure where we were going. We were
hilarious.
Just improvising the whole time.
Ridiculously
funny.
And I
love Kevin Hart. So, you know, there's nothing not to love about that guy. And I guess my father, you know, I'm proud of how articulate he is and how well he makes his point of view. I don't know, man. I've liked all of them, to be honest with you. Interviewing is interesting because you want to get people to actually deliver their unfiltered ideas.
Sam Brown,
yeah, man. Sam Brown, you know, who died shortly after the second one we did. I thought he had a lot more time left when we were doing those interviews. I knew he was going to die. I mean, it was pancreatic cancer. You don't live from that. And he was having trouble walking when we did the second one because his tumors were so big. But
some of the best podcasting, those two parts, one and two.
Yeah, well, Sam's amazing. Sam was one of the brightest, quickest, funniest people I've ever met, you know. And it was very hard for him, man, because he had to say goodbye to his not only his beautiful wife, but his two kids, man. His one kid had just been born. He was never going to know that child. And then his other son was only three. And one of the things that, you know, I think about with Sam is I got to make sure those boys know what kind of a man their father was. That's why I want to do this podcast. But I'm going to make sure that as they get older, I provide nourishment to the myth that is their father, because there's a lot of good about Sam. He was a very, very interesting guy, man. He was a hard dude. I mean, he lived hard. Not in the sense that he drank and smoked. He was a thinker. He just never let himself off the hook.
I love the Sam Brown. I would say that I've enjoyed the two episodes, episode 10 with your father, Michael Callan, as well as episode number 17, which, by the way, is our largest downloadable episode as far as just download numbers.
Which one was that?
Your father's episode number 17 with
Michael
Callan.
Seem to like him, and I understand why they like him. The guy doesn't take a side. He gets to the root of the problem. You know, he and I had a long conversation about this last book I just read, Lawrence Lessig's Republic Lost, that Hunter Motz recommended to me. And it's just about what big money in politics and what the concentration of power, of corporate power, is doing to our country. It is, government is becoming, not only government, but manipulation of government, i.e. becoming a lobbyist, is a huge career path where you make lots and lots of money. And that's the biggest threat. We all know it. It's just, you've got to know if you want to kill the snake, you got to know where its head's at, and sometimes that's difficult to find.
Well, your dad's episodes 10 and 17 plus the Hunter Motz and even the Christy Wampaugh episode.
I love Christy Wampaugh,
but I've been the most critically sort of talked about within the social networking. If you go to the Twitter sphere and you look at retweets, or you go to the Facebook.
I don't do that enough. I need to do that. I'm sorry, guys. I don't look at your comments.
We're going to fix that next year.
In fact, that's one of the things I want to do this next year is I want to get more involved with my fans or the people that listen to this. I hate using that word fans, but the people that listen to the podcast, because maybe I can have more interaction. For example, if you click on Amazon or you go to Audible and you download a book through my website, and just
BrianCallen.com. BrianCallen.com. Yeah. Go there. You've got a contact form that you can fill out to let us know about, you know, your messages or notes or information you want to give to us. But BrianCallen.com's got everything.
And give me
you'll
your
need.
Email. Give me your email.
Yeah, we ask for their email when they send us.
Because I want to start collecting those emails so I can tell you when I'm coming to your town. But more importantly, tell me what books you're reading. If I like them, if they're funny, I will mention them on the air and I'll riff on it. Yeah, give me a little book review. I'm gonna actually start bringing my comments, my fan comments, onto the show. And I'm
well, in early January too, we've had over the last year, we've gotten lots of submissions, but we will be giving away 10 autographed DVDs of Man Class.
Oh shit!
In the beginning of January, which
who's
is
autographing
gonna be,
them? You are?
I am. Yeah.
Okay. Good.
And there'll be authentic Brian Callen signatures.
I'll wear them in my pants for a full day.
For a full day. BrianCallen.com is the place to find out about all the social connections. We've been updating it with new videos. We've been putting a whole new photo gallery thing together. There's going to be a lot more interaction, but we really want to make the listeners participate in the show at some level. We're going to actually be hooking up a voice message service where you can go onto the website and click a link and then write from your computer, leave a voicemail for us, and we can play those voicemails online as well. I mean, on the show as well. So that's going to be a nice little bonus. But we really want to incorporate more fan listeners to the show, and also get your feedback and commentary about certain shows, because there's been a lot of critical feedback, like I've been saying, on the social side, and we want to incorporate that because there's a lot of good thoughts. There was a ton. The Hunter Motz piece, which is episode number 25, was just getting a lot of interest. People were
he's
really
so fucking smart.
Critical.
The guy speaks 9 languages. He went to Harvard and got his bio.
Nice looking
degree.
Guy too.
Yeah, he's a good looking dude. He's a stud. The guy's a special dude. He's 31. He knows more than I do. He knows so much more than I do. I listen to him speak and he's so clear and articulate. And I'm like, this is what an intelligent mother. Yeah. That guy's really smart. I learn something every single time he comes over. Nobody reads more than that dude. And he's got his own business. He lives in the real world. It's not like he's an academic, mm-hmm. you know? He believes that most of us are taught that we are not smart enough at certain things. And that smart is something you're born with. And he's very much against that idea.
Oh, no, it's about exposure.
Yeah, he doesn't believe at all that it's about that. He thinks you can learn anything provided you are in the right emotional state.
Yeah, you could be... We limit the exposure out of fear for... overwhelming, I think, the majority of people. You know, I live in a world where
we also
I'm
live
constant.
In a goddamn culture that doesn't necessarily believe in, well, it does believe in hard work. Americans are actually very hardworking, but like math, you know, the reason people aren't good at math is because math just by its nature takes a lot of work. And, you know, Malcolm Gladwell in The Outliers talks about, I think it's The Outliers, I've read all his books because I'm really smart, but I think he talks about how cultures that farm rice, usually Chinese cultures and stuff, rice is a very labor-intensive crop, and it requires actually a great deal of math just to do. You got to measure, you know, the water and all that. Those are the cultures that do well in math, because just because a math problem takes you 2 hours is part. It's a for yeah. That's their culture. You work your ass off at everything. Everything is supposed to take 2, 3, 4 hours in everything. When you train in martial arts, or you train in dance, or you train in gymnastics from those cultures, yeah, you practice 6, 7 hours a day. Yeah, that's the order of the day. We don't necessarily come from that sort of value system. You know, I mean, we do, but we don't. You know, it's very easy to kind of go, this shit is hard. I'm a verbal person. You know, I'm good at talking. And people always talk about China this and China that. It's going to take over the world. I don't agree with that. As long as we preserve and nourish an incentive structure in this country that allows you to get richer faster than your neighbor off of your own ingenuity and your ideas, not off your influence, not off your ability to manipulate government, i.e. big corporations, but rather just on what you can innovate and what you can make.
Right.
That's where the strength of our economy and our culture lies.
No, I'm a big I'm a big fan of production. I'll tell you that much. I like to produce.
Well,
like
you're good. Produce. You're a good example of a guy who's, you know, always sort of thinking and, you know.
I think at the beginning of the year, we're going to get your dad on the show again, just to keep him as a constant. We're going to talk about the fiscal cliff and issues pertaining to the next 4 years. And I think at some level how I think the big conversation is, how do you save? You know, how can we save? Because I think that's going to be the biggest, beyond philosophy changes in our culture. I think it's going to be, how do you save while still having a good time? Because right now, I think we are trying so hard to have a much better time than we had yesterday.
Right.
And I think that you can't keep one-upping the best time you had, you know what I mean? You have to have some moments to digress and reel back and relax and wind down. And I'd like to see us really save. I'd like to see us plan for our futures. I mean, that's my biggest thing right now. I want to buy a house and start a family. And I'm only seeing that becoming harder unless you're rich. So here's my plan.
Yeah.
I need to borrow $100,000 from you. Now, hear
this
me out.
This is so
hear
awkward, dude. I don't
hear
have that.
Me out.
I don't. Why are you asking
hear me
for
out.
Money on the podcast?
I know that you could so figure odd. Out. You can. We can steal Joe Rogan's Porsche. Just hear me
Wait
out.
Wait a minute, dude.
So here's the deal. We take the $100,000 that you loaned to me. You're loaning this to me. I'm going to pay you back.
Yeah.
Here's what we do. We bring it to your father,
oh, no.
And we tell him, invest it for us. No. Listen, it's a good idea.
It's a terrible
he
idea,
invests
dude.
The money I borrow from you. It's staying in the family.
Yeah.
You hear that? It stays in
what
the family.
What are you going to do with the money?
I'm going to take the principal.
What would you do if I gave you $20 million? How would your life change?
Well, first of all, I would put a school together in your name as a gesture
you know, by the way. While we're here for the holidays, it's probably going to be, we're going to air this after, but.
Yeah, no, but I think, you know, there's always.
Here's a couple charities I
returns
wanted,
and
I
stuff.
Tout.
Oh, yeah,
returns. And by the way, let's talk about where I'm going to be. What the fuck?
Well, this is, you know,
dude,
I'm not your
babysitter.
We
haven't even talked about where I'm going to be.
You're
going to
be
We should have done
all...
this in the beginning. Can we do this in the beginning?
Well, we can do it in the all beginning right. and after the fact. It's all good.
I am going to be at the San Francisco Punchline. January 16th, 17th, 18th, and 19th.
Punching
doing
them out.
Stand-up comedy.
Punching them in their face
yep.
with jokes.
And then I'll be at the Vancouver Comedy Mix in Canada, January 24th, 25th, and 26th.
Mixing up a stew of comedy.
Yep, I'm excited about those
Canada
dates.
Style.
Canada style is right. I'm pumped. Yeah, it's going to be fun, man. So come on by, man.
And then all the dates, by the way, are on briancallen.com. Go to briancallen.com, Bryan Callen, Callen.com, and see all of his future dates, buy tickets, buy stuff.
Yeah, baby.
briancallen.com.
Yeah, baby.
So what charities are you talking about?
I wanted to talk to you guys about some charities that I'm promoting. And if you want to buy somebody a gift, you know, there's nothing like donating to a charity in somebody's name is what I'm trying to say. One of them is shininghopeforcommunities.org. You can go to shininghopeforcommunities.org, which is an outstanding school for girls in the Kibera slum in Nairobi, Kenya. It's a really good thing, and all the money goes to that school. And then there's rescue.org, which actually sends Afghan girls to school for the year for only $52. The future or non-future of those countries that we read about all the time lay in whether or not those young people get an education. It's the best. You're not going to change those countries with guns. You're going to change them with ideas. Then there's a great charity called vitalvoices.org/HAWA Fund, H-A-W-A Fund. And it runs a hospital and school and a refugee camp, essentially, in war-torn Somalia, right in Mogadishu. And it services 90,000 people. And a woman started it.
Wow.
And when the Shabab tried to close it, which is their sort of militant Islamic fucking young men who've never read a book and they freaked out, she stood up to them and got the whole community to stand behind her. And then she got a written apology from them.
Wow.
She's doing a great job, you know. So these are charities that really could use help. And I just... I think about these places, maybe because I lived in these parts of the world. I think when you're around people, whether they're Arabic or African, or what you realize, of course, is that they're exactly like us.
Yeah.
They are exactly like us in that they feel the same way. They have the same hopes and fears and wishes and all those things. It's why, you know, there's this tendency as human beings, man, we all have it. When you read about these atrocities in the Congo, as an example, and there are some terrible things going on there, you just get the sense, well, it's so horrible, I can't think about it, because hopefully they don't suffer the way we do, because it's already really bad. Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do.
They're digging minerals out of the ground with their bare hands.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Bare hands.
That's right. And they bleed just as red and they scream just as loud. I'm sorry to be graphic, but it's all a goddamn tragedy. So I don't think you can change the world necessarily, but I'm trying to do my part and be responsible with this podcast to make a dent in the best way I know how.
We'll make those charities available too on the website as well. We'll list them up.
Yeah, I also give every month to Doctors Without Borders. That's another great charity. I like charities. I don't believe in charity that just gives to people. I believe in charity that inspires. But sometimes things are so bad, you just need medical care. You just need clean running water. You just need food before you can do anything.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's nice to say, well, the poor don't need bread, they need inspiration. I love that quote, and it's true. It comes from a book called The Science of Getting Rich, I think. It was written in 1900. Yes, okay, but, you know, there are charities that are doing the basic grunt work on the ground, man.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's my pitch. You know, and here's the other thing I have to say about life. Problems can be solved. All of them can be solved. All of them. I don't like this idea, well, what are you going to do about it? Like the NRA, you know, I own guns, okay? I'm not some screaming, you know, left-wing liberal, but I own guns. But, you know, I don't like this idea of the NRA being silent for as long as they've been silent. I know they were trying to get their shit together. Now they want to have armed volunteers on school campuses. A dumb idea.
Stupid.
You know, all problems can be solved. We can figure out a way. We can. We can figure out a way to neutralize these maniacs, psychopaths who come in and shoot kids. We can. I don't know if it's getting a cop to hang out with a gun. It might be. I'm always in favor of that shit. You and I were talking about it. Give me a time machine and a fucking gun. I would love a time machine and a gun and pop that dude right in his head. We all would. You know, I actually do believe in meeting force with force in certain circumstances. But the point is that this problem can be solved. All problems can be solved. When the wrong ideas win the day, people suffer. And when the wrong ideas win the day, a lot of times, just remember this, it can get worse and even worse than that. So, you know, the real battleground is in earning your opinion, because your opinion should be based on thought, not attitude. And it takes work. And sometimes you don't have time, which is, by the way, why I go to audible.com, not to plug the people that sponsor us, but you can get a lot read while you're driving around in your car and read the important things, read the real thinkers. And the other thing is, by the way, in this next coming year, I'm going to start sort of touting more books that I think are important, because I happen to believe that you can read 4 books on various subjects, one on politics, one on philosophy, another on social science, another and 4 books on history. And if you know, if you read the right 4 books, if you read, so it would take you 20 books to read, you would know a whole lot about a whole lot. Or you could read 200 books and they're all the wrong books and learn very little. Well, so it's minimum effective dose.
Well, I think critical thinking only happens when you've read a lot, you know, and critical thinking will change and read
the right things, right, and been exposed by, you know, the proper tutors to how to think about these things.
Well, you don't run into a school with a bunch of guns when you have the capacity to critically think. I think that's the big.
Well,
the
yeah.
Big
I mean, thing. By the way, and that's the other thing about this. There's a lot of, like, you know, Christy Wampole had written this article about white male rage and white men being left behind. There may be some truth in that. I don't actually necessarily agree with that, but you know, this guy was batshit crazy. He was batshit crazy, and nobody's going to talk about. There's no social explanation. He was a crazy person people are born with faulty computers in their heads sometimes, and sometimes that computer hits a wire and they become a homicidal maniac. I don't care what the fuck happened. I don't care what about this guy and why he was crazy. I just want to know how we can take nut jobs like this and get him into either the ground or in a cage before they do something like this again. That's what I give a fuck about. So sorry to be blunt, but that's how I feel.
Well, this whole episode was to bring the end of 2012 and enter into 2013. I think we've pretty much brought up all of the episodes that have meant some stuff to us during this last year, and more episodes to come. It's going to be a great 2013. Just as an added treat, we have a bonus interview with John Leguizamo. What's the John
Leguizamo, who I've been a fan of since the 1991. I mean, we did this movie called Ride Along, got really close, and it was such a pleasure and an honor. I would go out at night and hang with him and Lawrence Fishburne, and we would just talk and hang out. I got to have dinner with him and Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know, it was pretty cool. And then me and John and Rick Fox went out one night. You know, John knows a lot of famous people, but he is a special dude. And so here's 15 minutes of him talking. It was 2 a.m, and we were still waiting to do our shot. And it was just a long, long night and long day. And I just said, let's do a podcast really quickly. And we laid this down in 15 minutes. So enjoy. All right, this is the Brian Callen Show. I'm here with I'm here with John Leguizamo. Johnny Legs. John Leguizamo. We're doing a movie out here in...
And it is 2 o'clock in the freaking morning, and yeah. We haven't even... I was what, an extra, glorified extra for a second?
You know, it's funny because you realize acting is... When you're doing a film, it's just fucking sitting around and waiting.
No. It's the roles we took that are fucking us up.
Well, you know,
you play fourth or fifth string player in this thing, then you're a glorified extra.
We're having a good time, though.
We are having a blast, but I'm really happy I met you, man.
Yeah, man, you've been great.
You know, when I saw you, I said, you look like Jason Robards.
I don't want to fucking look like Jason Robards,
you totally
bro.
Look like a younger,
no, I don't want to look
modern
like that, dude.
Day Jason Robards.
Listen,
I bet you he pulled down. I bet you he did. He had a lot of tail.
Maybe he's my father.
I bet he hit a lot of skins.
I don't know if my mom slept with Jason Robart. I don't think my father would even care. He'd take a look at me like, whatever.
Jason Robart's
my dad could beat that guy up by looking at him.
Yeah, because he drank too much. Yeah. I hope I'm not dissing Robart's, Jason Robart.
He's a good actor.
You did one of my favorite plays in the whole world that I want to do as an all Latin cast. Long Day's Journey into tonight.
All Latin cast. That'd be cool.
That'd be hot.
Dude, I want to be up. I can play Latin. Look, I can. Hey, John.
I didn't say an all Latin stereotypical.
No, but look, I can play a guy from Latin America.
Oh, yeah, we're going to do Long Day's Journey tonight like this. Your long day. Edmond, you got consumption or what? Stop coughing.
What's the problem with you? You have.
Now they want us. What's up, baby?
This is Taryn. She's at the door and she's going to get. She's calling us in.
She's the one. Wow, really?
Will you find out if I'm done? I'm not done.
50 Splinter.
So that's film. So now we've been hanging out for eight hours, and then we decided to do a podcast, and they come to the
and
door.
They tell me that I got to do a Splinter for the same scene I did the other day. I'm really
so
confused,
weird.
Man. I sound like really New York that moment. I heard myself. I got to do that scene again.
This has been a marker for me because I've been a fan of yours since fucking seriously 19.
Well, now you're going to get all serious on us and whatnot?
Yeah, but I've been a fan of yours for, you know, if you guys haven't seen John's 5 one-man shows.
God
five,
damn, five.
You're out of your
makes
mind.
Makes you feel old when you say that.
In all bullshit aside, you are a groundbreaker. You
know what? You're right.
You are.
No, I agree with you because I started doing things that I didn't think were going to work. I wasn't sure if they were going to work. I didn't think people would get it, which was taking sort of a play, stand-up, real serious issues, and my own life. You know, I go, who the hell cares about my life? I just got to say it. I had to say it, though. And I go, nobody's going to get it. Nobody's going to care. And then all of a sudden, dog, people started responding to it, and I got a lot of people
responding.
Going.
You won Emmys. You fucking were the toast of the town. I became a stand-up. I swear to God, I'm not just telling you this. One of the biggest reasons I became a stand-up was because I wanted to do what you were doing.
And you're
I'm
huge.
I'm telling you, man.
You're huge. Yeah, you're huge.
I'm amazing. No, but not to
bring Ray Romano. I'm Ray Romano.
Not to bring
you're
it back
huge.
To myself, but you had a huge impact on people. But keep going. So
I mean, because I loved mime. I've always loved mime. I don't know why. I'm the only person in the world who loves mime. I love theater.
Yeah.
And I love funny. And I tried to take the three things that I loved and try to merge it together. I mean, you know, of course I had precursors who really opened doors, and I just took a page out of everybody's book.
Yeah, but you were talking like briefly.
like I'm talking Spalding Gray.
He's great.
The whole really personal story to the max. And then you had Lily Tomlin, who took the one person show to a play version.
Never saw it.
And then Richard Pryor.
Yeah,
there'll be nobody. We were just watching that on YouTube.
Yeah, you know what,
Richard
man?
Pryor
Richard
on Pryor's, Coke is the best thing.
Yeah, you
I've
got
ever
a YouTube
seen.
Richard Pryor on Coke.
It's wild.
Richard Pryor had a huge influence on you. I'm just realizing that now.
He had all the influence on me.
Yeah,
Richard Pryor.
Yeah. He talked. I mean, he had the people he grew up with, those characters.
Man, I mean, because he was the realest, the funniest, the most political. I mean, he hit every note that I love in comedy, you know. Yeah. I mean, I love comedy that's about something. I don't want it. I mean, I tried to make my stuff be about something. I
you
always
did.
Try.
There was, but you paid a price a little bit. I mean, with family and you know.
Well, that's I guess part of the learning curve is I didn't realize, you know, because I was doing it in a bubble. You know, I was doing my comedy far away from my family. Didn't know what I was doing. I was doing it in little clubs.
Yeah, I remember seeing you. I remember seeing you way before you were John Leguizamo.
Right. And people were laughing and shit. So I forgot that all the stuff that I was saying was about my family, and they became characters. So I got a little disassociated from the situation. And then when I did it, then I realized. Well, I didn't realize. They made me realize because. Holy shit, I became...
Well, you said when you would go home that people would be taking
holidays.
Turns.
Every freaking holiday, I was terrified because I know as soon as everybody had one or two drinks, somebody would start and go, John, you think you can say all this about us? You really think you could say it about grandma? How the hell? And boy, they would start punching
at me. A lot of writers who write about
verbally.
Their family have to deal with that too. A lot of authors who, you are an author, but a lot of authors who write books and people see themselves in those books.
Well, Eugene O'Neill, Long Day's Journey Tonight, didn't want this thing published till after. You know, and
exactly.
I said,
until
really,
after he was dead.
Right.
And his wife
it the year after because she wanted the money.
But he couldn't publish it while he was. It was too personal.
No. It was too personal. And, you know, and this was, you know, luckily I made it funny. So it takes a lot of the sting off of it.
It was,
you know,
it was very real and raw, though. I mean, I remember Freak was one of the best things I've ever seen on stage because what you were able to do is it was so personal and raw that it moved you. It was almost like the linear quality and the way you worked it and how well written was almost secondary.
Yeah.
What was more important was the fact that there was so much fucking emotion in it.
Right. And Ghetto Clown, I think I topped it. It's at first, Ghetto Clown was sort of an exorcism and a sort of a colonic, an emotional colonic. But then it became a little self-masochistic because I started saying stuff that I felt like as an artist I had to say, but as a professional person who's got an image that I like to uphold sometimes,
yeah.
It was kind of tearing that all apart, you know what I mean? And I was conflicted by Ghetto Clown a little bit because I was going, oh, man, do I really need to say all this stuff? People are going to know all this stuff. They're not going to think that I'm always successful, that I'm always a hit, and that I got a lot of problems. But I did it, man, and I think it was really gratifying because what I wanted to show the youth in America, especially the Latin youth, is you can be from anywhere and you can make it, man. All you got to do is just keep going.
Well, that's interesting, though, but what do you mean by that? Like, you're right. You did come from Queens. You didn't come from money. You came from... You know, you.
I didn't come from money. I came from nothing.
You could have easily
anti-money.
You could have easily been a janitor in jail. So many things. Working.
Right, been there, done that.
You could have been doing. You could have been doing all of it, and you. That's why I say you're a groundbreaker. Because.
But you know what? But I tell you, like I say in Ghetto Clown, I didn't do it by myself, man. And you can't do it by yourself. When you come from a situation like mine, there's one huge factor, an ingredient that can't be missing, and that's a mentor. You got to have mentors, man. You got to have somebody in your life at some point or several points come and say to you, this is possible. You can do it.
Sure.
You got it. And I had a math teacher, Mrs. Zufa, who I always give props to, who who said to me, "Was I'm look, if they can make penicillin out of moldy bread, they can make something out of you, Mr. Lescus." Why don't you become a comedian? And
that's funny, bro. If they can make penicillin out of moldy bread, they can make something out of you. Hey, thanks a lot, Teach.
No, but he did. He meant it in a good way, I think. And he meant that, you know, that I could become a comedian, that I could do something. And then my stepmom, too, stepped in there. She goes, "You can do all those voices. Why don't you stop failing out of life and flunking 101 and do something with yourself?" You know, and people started.
You're such an intense motherfucker. I like working out with you, and I'm trying to work out. I started laughing because you're like, you're fucking bouncing the ball. You're doing crazy shit. And I'm like, everything you do, even the way you talk, is loud. Like you talk.
I used
loud.
To be really loud. I'm not as loud. My wife.
But you're so intense. You're like, it's everything is on full speed, and I identify with that because I feel that way too.
Right? Yeah, I mean, you're not the most subtle, waspy person I've ever met.
No, I'm not.
I mean, you're not talking like this.
No,
like,
I wish I was, but I love you for that. It's one of the things I love about you. It's one of the things I find so refreshing. Everything means something to you. You give a shit about everything, including the world, including politics, including. Everything moves you. I could tell you something like
that.
My
God, you sound like Chris Matthews, man.
I do.
If I close my eyes for a minute, I feel like I'm hanging out with Chris Matthews,
ladies and gentlemen. He lives near me, actually.
Dude, but you got to go on this show.
I don't hear it.
Because you're mad political, too, man. I can't believe. Well, I mean, first of all, forget it. I mean, I'm just catching up to you and your level. This is like a bromance right here.
Yeah.
Catching up to your level of knowledge, man. I mean, you know everything about everything. It's ridiculous. We go to dinner with you and we sit there like we're, you know, like we're back in college at a conference or something.
I appreciate
it. A seminar.
Well, I thought it was great when Lawrence Fishburne asked me for a reading list. That was pretty funny.
That's nuts. Lawrence Fishburne, who's incredibly well read, man.
He's
a learned man.
We've been hanging, me and John have been eating dinner with Lawrence Fishburne, and it's just been, I love hanging out with him.
He's amazing. This is my second movie with him. I did Assault on Precinct 13, and we hung out a little bit, but not a lot because I wasn't a glorified extra. I was actually having to work a lot, and so was he. So it wasn't that much time to hang, but this, that we have nothing to do.
See, this has been exciting for me, though, because I get to work with you. I get to work with Kevin Hart, Ice Cube, Lawrence Fishburne, and I'm number 4 on the call sheet. This is great
for me. I'm number 5.
I got no
problem.
I'm
below you.
You are?
Yeah.
John Leguizamo's below me on the call. What the fuck? That's
because,
hilarious.
Because that means so fucking much.
Bro, that's hilarious to me.
I'm number 5.
Yeah, I don't
I'm
even
below
know what
you.
It means. I just know I'm 4 on the call sheet because my agent said I was number 4 on the call sheet. Which means nothing.
Enjoy it, man. Enjoy while it lasts, buddy.
Yeah. Well, ain't that
you'll be number 20.
You never know when you have a job, man. I don't know what the fuck. I don't know when I'm gonna.
That's
what's
so
what
great about our career.
Is.
That is what's so great about our career, man. That you don't know when you're gonna have a job because you know what? It keeps you on your fucking toes.
Yes, it keeps you. On
it
your
keeps
toes.
You hungry. Look at us. You're here drumming, working on your drumming
working
skills, which you got to work on some more.
Hey, dude.
And I'm in the other room. I'm reading Long Day's Journey tonight. I'm reading Richard III. Like it's gonna happen, but. But I got to keep the dream alive.
Well, that's what do you want to do? That brings me to what do you want to do?
Wait a minute.
In 10
Yo,
years?
I got to do a scene that I don't even know, bro. I'm gonna have to go.
You know what scene you have to do?
But you just said I got to go do scene 50.
You're not speaking, bro. They're doing the. It's your angle when they blow
no,
things up.
No, that's 61.
Scene 50.
That's what I'm gonna go look. What the fuck is scene 50?
Is that what she said? Scene 50.
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna pause this.
I'm not even doing it with the director. I'm doing it with whoever has a flip camera or iPhone. That's how much I rate on this movie.
Second unit.
I just work with Ridley Scott. I want to tell that everybody.
Hey,
and Michael Fassbender.
Listen,
and this
Story,
is how you treat me.
Tim Story's badass. Tim Story hasn't made a movie that has every movie he makes is fucking makes 100.
Barbershop.
It's amazing.
Think Like a Man.
Think Like a Man.
Fantastic Four. Okay,
Fantastic
maybe not that.
Four. So that made $500 million, I think. Silver Surfer made $500 million worldwide. Dude, wow. The dude is no joke.
Tim Story,
and he's a great guy. So Tim, if you listen to this, I'm sure Tim's going to listen.
And he's
to this.
Black. I love that even better.
Well, that's the other refreshing thing, honestly.
He's
not
he's,
to be
he's my black superhero.
Not to be too politically correct, but it's pretty cool that we're down in this chocolate city called Atlanta, and that's how they call. And that's what it's called. And
yeah, because I was going, yo, chocolate
bro,
city.
You see so many black professionals
in power,
like, in power,
running things,
like black
smoothly.
People in Mercedes, black people like in positions of power, and not only that, this set is full of people who are like. You know, executives.
They run everything.
Things,
they run everything.
All black.
It's awesome.
It's pretty. I've never have.
Dude,
never
and this is
experience.
A small budget movie that looks like $100 million.
Yeah.
And that's not a small feat.
John's being called.
All right, I gotta go.
All right, we're gonna. They want me to. All right, we're gonna put you all on hold, and we'll be back with John Leguizamo.
You've been listening to The Brian Callen Show. Be sure to visit briancallen.com for information about this episode as well as past and future episodes. You can follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Callen and like him on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/Brian Callen Comedy. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.